Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, are you familiar with the Loud family?
Clearly, Patrick, you've never been to one of our Thanksgiving gatherings. Okay, Patrick, before we get started today, here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We would be remiss if we did not play the theme music for this this topic.
Yeah.
We don't do this one every time. We like to, you know, save it, you know, put it out there once in a while, because we do a lot of the fan mail episodes, so we don't want to necessarily, like, play the jingle, the theme music
right
every time, but let's do it today. So we have
theme music
submitted by Mike Wagner.
Yeah.
And features Jody Gersh singing, and let's just hear it right now.
Hey, suburban rockers, get ready as Patrick and Jim answer your fan mail. We get to hear from peoples across the fruited plains and around the world with their comments, questions, dreams, and stories about past and future topics. And don't forget to send your own fan mail, you rockin' listeners. You can always write a letter. You could call the Suburban Party Line. Toss up a quick email. Or rant on an audio file and hope Matt Windler finds it. But there's absolutely one way that beats them all.
Open up the window and yell. Open up the window and yell.
So there's that. Thank you very much, and we so appreciate it. And I think if anybody else out there is musically inclined and wants to do some theme music, I think we still need one for our movies segment.
Movies
would be good,
right?
Mm-hmm. We need a game break, just like a little stinger or something. That's just
that's
like
right
a couple of seconds,
yeah,
right, for when we do our score updates on
that's right
Loud yep United and whatnot,
mm-hmm,
and. Is there anything else we need theme music for?
I think, I think this trend of bingo may develop. So if somebody wants to get ahead and work on
bingo
some music
one
where we pick a letter and a
yeah
number in our catalog, you know, basically when we need to fill in
yeah
some shows.
I want to do that again. I enjoyed the last episode we did on
it's
that.
It's
fun. So that would be great.
Well, dude, I got to tell you, I got hooked on that Vulgar Boatman record.
That's
so
great.
It was great. Yeah.
Love it. That's one of my favorites. You're going to hear a little bit about that in fan mail tomorrow.
Great.
All right, so good. Now people are excited, and they want to stick with this because it's every day.
Yeah.
So anyway, we love the theme music, and keep it coming. If you hear a segment,
yeah,
and you want to send us some theme music, we would love to have it. Okay, now.
And I will say, Jim, just really quick, if you didn't understand the reference about sticking your head out the window and yell,
yeah,
go back to like the first, somewhere between episode 200 and 400, and you'll get
probably
it.
Yeah. It used to be what we would tell people when they correspond yeah with us. One way to get to reach us and catch our attention is open up the window and yell. Now, you don't want to do that, though, necessarily right now, because you're going to be invaded by cicadas.
Get your
right
mouth full of cicadas, yeah.
Keep the You may
or
want to keep the window closed right now, but, you know.
That's yeah right. Just yell inside. Someone will come eventually.
Yes. I have some things to mention about cicadas, but I'm going to save that for tomorrow. All right, let's move on here. So
okay,
I wanted to, the first fan mail topic I wanted to address here is the episode we did on Frightened Rabbit with
yes
listener
Noah Crane.
Yes, and it was mm-hmm great, and it got a lot of attention. But part of the reason why I want to do this one right up top here is because there's a small correction
okay
that a couple of people addressed here, and that's fine, you know.
Very good, yeah.
Occasionally we get things wrong, so here,
what did I say that was wrong?
I don't think it was, I don't know if it was you or I don't know, or if we
my money's on me.
It was just a little bit of a natural assumption that anyone would make.
Okay,
and if you didn't know the full story, you would not you
oh
know quite understand. So I think it's fine. I don't
sure
think anyone, you know, is in trouble or anything like that. But anyway,
okay, good.
So here on Instagram, we don't get a lot of comments on Instagram, but a listener named Andrew said the Tiny Changes cover album was curated by Scott Hutchison while he was alive as a tribute to the record so beloved by so many people. It was not created in memoriam after his death.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was, however, released after his death. And in fact, its release was delayed by 1 year so as not to come off, so as not to come across as some kind of cash grab in the wake of his passing. So there you go.
Man, that is super helpful. Who was that on Instagram?
Andrew.
Andrew, thank you, man. Because I didn't know that. And that's really, really interesting, too, I think, with the timing of his unfortunate passing, right? And then the release, you would, like you said, Jim, naturally assume, which I did.
Yeah, it was a tribute that people got together, so let's make a tribute.
Yeah, makes sense. Yep.
But he was actually, involved in the creation
really,
of that album.
Really interesting. I have no idea. That is so cool.
Right. And you don't also wouldn't necessarily think that either. Usually artists are not involved in their own tribute albums. So that's another thing, too.
I find that fascinating. Yeah. And thank you, Andrew, for clarifying that. I mean, man, I got to learn more about this because I wonder if it was just like all these people were going to do it and he heard about it and said, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it this way. Or, you know, was there some other story or... You know, did a lot of people just love the record so much? I don't know. I need to find out. So that's great. Thank you, man.
Okay. So along those lines here, there was a Facebook comment we got from Jay Ignacio. Who says, I regret never getting to see Frightened Rabbit. I used to think Swim Until You Can't See Land was about escape and freedom. But after his death, I hear the desperation and thoughts of suicide. It's very chilling.
Yeah.
Then he goes on.
Moving.
Along what we just discussed, he says, Jay says, I wanted to add that there are two tribute albums out there. There's Tiny Changes, a celebration of Frightened Rabbit's Midnight Organ Fight. It was completed before Scott's death, but released posthumously. It includes Julian Baker, Craig Finn of the Hold Steady, Ben Garrett of Death Cab for Cutie, and Aaron Dessner of The National, okay? But then he also lists here, there's another one called A Celebration of the Songs of Scott Hutchison Live at Rough Trade. It's a live tribute album by some of the same artists, and it's available on SoundCloud. So there you go. And he gave us a link here. And he then says, rest in power, Scott. You can stop swimming. So,
there you go. Beautiful stuff by Jay Ignacio. Send me that link.
Yep, you got it. It's on the way. Okay. And then, let's see here. Tim Hoffman, listener Tim Hoffman, says this was a great episode. Thank you, Noah. I was lucky enough to see Frightened Rabbit in 2018 at the Black Cat in D.C. on the tour celebrating the 10th anniversary of the Midnight Organ Fight. It was a powerful show from a band which at the time I was just beginning to appreciate. Listening to them again this morning, I agree with Noah that this is a perfect album. So there you go.
Cool. Thanks, Tim. Wish I was at that show.
Yeah. My whole, I'll get my whole, I'll get my whole, get my whole, get my whole. Someone to keep yourself warm. Okay, so there you go. That's some correspondence on Frightened Rabbit. And then, Patrick, I think you'll enjoy this. We got some correspondence on the special episodes you did about game theory. And
So happy.
Yeah, what was different about those episodes is you put them together in more of sort of a narrative structure with a couple people. Who did you talk to again?
I talked to Brett Milano, who's kind of an expert. He wrote a book on Scott Miller, Don't Thank Me All at Once, The Lost Pop Genius of Scott Miller. So go get that. It's out there. You can get it on Kindle, probably find a used copy. And also Annie Zaleski, who wrote the liner notes to the reissues that came out on Omnivore Recordings. They did a very comprehensive reissue program, Jim, like picking up all the early stuff, putting together sort of last recordings from Scott, finishing those and putting them out as an album, as well as faithfully reissuing with extensive liner notes and pictures, you know, of all those original records, including the EPs. So it's really out there on vinyl. It's out there in a lot of places, thanks to Omnivore. And I will tell you this, as many of you know, my daughter was my youngest offspring was a pretty decent soccer player, and that occasioned us to travel around the East Coast and occasionally pretty far. But one time we had a little tournament up in Princeton, New Jersey. And if anyone has been to the Princeton Record Exchange in Princeton, New Jersey, it is one of the very best record stores, I think, in the United States. Definitely one of the best ones I've ever been to. And I just went in there and found three of those Omnivore reissues.
Oh, cool.
Game Theory sealed, and they'd all been marked down to like $7 from the original, like 22 or whatever it was, because there's so many records that come in and out of Princeton Record Exchange. If it's there for longer, they just keep marking it down. And I was like, thank the sweet Lord, you know, that it's here. And I bought all those, and it was a fantastic find. And they make great companions to my originals.
That's wonderful. Okay.
Yeah. So if anyone's ever been in the Princeton Record Exchange, let me know. I've only been there two times, and both times I could have spent $500 easy. If you had
$500.
$500.
Yeah, right. Okay. Okay. Well, I think you will enjoy these comments that we got from listeners.
Great.
About game theory. Let me read you this first one here. It's from, okay, it's a Facebook comment we got from Michael Zwirn. And he says, I got into game theory backwards via Loud Family, since I was way too young to hear game theory when their records came out. Now, don't rub it in there, Michael. But anyway, he says, I didn't even hear Loud Family at the outset, but I bought Interbabe Concern in 1996 following an extraordinary two-part, multi-thousand-word review, more of a rapture than a review, he says, by Glenn McDonald on his site and then on Usenet groups. It led into a long association with the Loud Family's email listserv, the Loud Fans, remember listservs? Through which I made a great many friendships and discovered a lot of great bands as well. I had the chance to see the Loud Family tour just twice in their latter days as a national touring act, and even helped them do an in-store gig at DCCD, the Adams Morgan record store, around 1998. At that time, it was well nigh impossible to track down the Game Theory back catalog on LP or CD, although I pieced it together eventually. It's been great following the reissues from Omnivore Recordings, recapping the Game Theory years from Blaze of Glory through Across the Barrier of Sound compilation. Although, of course, that pleasure was so severely dampened by Scott Miller's absence as people rediscover his music. So there you go.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, Jim. And I'm really glad this came up, because there's one thing I wanted to say. Last week on Listener New Music, somebody, when they were given their pick, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it is, said something about Game Theory at the top, and said they don't deserve to be, you know, world famous, but they should be at least as famous as Red Cross.
Right.
And I missed this joke, right? I don't know if you remember who that was, but Glenn McDonald was in Red Cross, and that is the connection there.
Oh, okay.
but that review, you know, has become pretty legendary. You know, it's almost like, who was it? John Landau wrote, I've seen the future rock and roll. His name is Bruce Springsteen or whatever. It's one of those, you know, essays that people pass around and stuff like that. So Also, Red Cross is a really kick-ass band.
I agree.
I like them a lot. Yeah.
I agree. But I think that's an interesting sort of measuring stick, you know, for like it indie is, rock. Because yeah. You kind of have in your mind. Like,
and
yeah.
It was, yeah. That was so funny. And I swear to God, I was laying down and thinking to myself, oh my God, I missed that completely. Yeah. I don't know why. And I'm sorry. Whoever that was, I'll probably be apologizing to you right now. But anyway... So I never saw Game Theory either live, and that was one of the great regrets that I have, that I never was able to see the band. However, Loud Family, you know, we didn't even touch on this maybe briefly, but I think Annie Zaleski also got into Game Theory via Loud Family. And, you know, it's when you're born, man. It's not your fault. The thing about that was I did see Loud Family play twice.
Oh, cool.
And both times in D.C., and it may have been on the same day that this, you know, Adams Morgan in store happened, right in the afternoon. And then you play a show in the evening. Both times there were like 15 people there, or, you know, 20 people. And there's this amazing band, Scott Miller and his hair and everything playing. And, you know, it's just one of those things like, why don't people get, you know, how good this is for whatever reason? It was just a confluence of bad timing, you know, bad era, wrong moment, you know, all that stuff about these legendary bands. And Game Theory fits in, but their music endures so intensely. And I think, you know, as Michael says, it's just one of those things when it strikes you, you know, it strikes you the right way. And it's one of the hidden pleasures about rock and roll. I mean, it's like finding a little gold nugget. You know, when you go hiking, it's just one of those things that happens.
That's cool. Yep. I just
life is chaos, Jim.
That's right. That's right. I just want to say that there's probably no better name for a '90s record store in this area than DCCD.
That's right.
I mean, whoever came up with that deserved a bonus, right?
So, right on time.
That's right. Okay, now a couple more things, real quickly here. I thought this was really interesting. Enrique Cruz says, I discovered Game Theory, Mojo Nixon, TSOL, 45 Grave, and many others by listening to the Enigma Variations compilations.
Yeah, man.
They were
great
cheap
record.
And loaded with great stuff. And then he says, I just had a flashback of Game Theory appearing on the Arsenio Hall show. Is my mind playing tricks on me? I don't remember.
God, I hope not.
He says, I don't remember them.
I want to see that.
Yeah. He says, I don't remember them being household names. Oh, well. I did some quick, you know, Googling on this and could find no evidence of Game Theory on Arsenio Hall show. But if any listeners know that did happen, you know, let us know. All right. Not sure.
Well, I'll say this, and I'm not proud of it, but I'll say it anyway. If anyone has ever waked and baked, one thing you could put on is the first album by Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper. It's like that, it's got like that orangish black and white cover where they're sort of standing, I don't know where they are, like on a pier. Mm-hmm. And the first song is Jesus at McDonald's. Yeah.
That's good.
If you're actually, you know, waking up and taking a bong hit, that's probably a good album to assess why you're doing that.
There you go.
I mean, it's got a song called, you know,
and that
Jesus at McDonald's.
Yeah. And that might, that sort of activity might explain why you think you saw Game Theory on the Arsenio Hall show, right?
There it is.
There you go. I don't know if that's true or not,
circle,
but I will tell you, I do know that Husker Du once appeared on the Joan Rivers show.
That did happen.
That really did happen.
I remember that very well.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember that very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was on Warehouse, right? Songs
I think
and
it
stories.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember it well.
That's so bizarre.
Very sad.
Okay. Now, Jay Ignacio on Facebook replied to Enrique's comment and said, thanks for reigniting my love for Game Theory. I too learned about Game Theory through the Enigma Variations compilations. Erica's World was on Volume 2, which I loved. Enigma was such a great label and had some of my favorite bands and albums to this day. Wire's Drill, Smithereens, Especially for You, Dead Milkmen's Big Lizard in My Backyard, and Sonic Youth's Daydream Nation in association with Blast First. So,
Right, and also Green on Red, featuring Chuck Prophet.
That's right, so, and he's right. The Enigma was a really cool label in the 80s, and they put out some great stuff.
Totally cool.
And I guess their samplers were a great music discovery tool, right?
I've got them up there. They were those low priced, you know, budget price samplers, and had some really good songs. I mean, how smart is that, right? It makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you make a cheap sample and you send it out. Warner Brothers did it for years. And I will say too, thank you very much to Enrique for bringing up 45 Grave for the first time ever on this podcast, I believe. Such an interesting cross between like indie rock and goth. I find this band really interesting. I don't particularly like their music, but I think the approach they took was really, really interesting.
Yep. One last email here I want to read. This is, we had already done a fan mail episode on David Bowie when we did the David Bowie countdown, but this one might have come in a little late or something. I definitely wanted to mention this, and I think this will make a good play out song for this episode.
Great.
So, Mackenzie Crenshaw
nice.
Emailed us and said, hey guys, late to the party because the semester is ending and it feels like hell is freezing over, but I have a great Bowie cover to share. Right before the pandemic really switched into gear, Durand Jones and the Indications released a cover of Young Americans, and it's probably been one of the things that's carried me through the past year, especially over the summer. It just has such a bright and crisp sound, and Durand's voice, I think, perfectly captured what Bowie intended as a tribute to 70s Philly soul. And that gospel choir backing vocal style is still one of the best things I've heard in a while. It never fails to make me smile, and I wanted to pass it along. Stay healthy. Happy spring, Mackenzie Crenshaw. So there you go. I find this really interesting because I think I said in the countdown thing that something along the lines of, I feel this is an uncoverable song because the Bowie sort of like vamping in the studio feels like something you can't just replicate. That you can't just do that, right? No. But we're gonna listen to this on the play out here, and by all accounts this is a really good cover of that song, so hats off to Durand Jones and the Indications for that.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, so interesting too to see that Mackenzie and others, and I'll tell you really quick, Jim, here before we sign off, my good friend the Bish was texting me that his daughter Madison and her friends are, you know, were really into Bowie and thought Bowie is really cool, and and he was saying like it doesn't ever feel out of time, but as those people, as that generation, Mackenzie and those younger folks, start to recognize that Bowie was paying tribute to Philly soul, that leads them to Philly soul,
right?
And now they're in. And they're done, and they're one of us, and that's all we really
exactly
want.
It. Right? It's so great.
You're vaccinated, so go forth.
That's right. All right, so we'll leave you with that. And tomorrow we have a very special fan mail episode. You'll understand when we get to that tomorrow. All right.
Okay.
Let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
groups in the country. This is their latest album. It's called Warehouse Songs and Stories. Here to sing You Can Be the One is Husker Du.